Let me know if this has ever happened to you. I was once teaching a beginner class when a yoga teacher colleague came in, put his mat down in the middle of the front row, and then proceeded to do every advanced variation of the poses that I was sharing. And again, this is a beginner class, and I could see everybody starting to watch him. And he was distracting everybody because he was doing these movements that nobody in that class could have been doing or should have been doing or wouldn't be able to do for ages, if ever. And I remember fuming in my head as I taught because it was so silly for him to come to a beginner's class and go right in that front row and not do any of the poses anybody else were doing. And especially as a teacher, it was frustrating because that was not the type of yoga that I wanted to teach people, and especially setting beginners up for this perception that one day they needed to practice like him in order to become a good yogi or practitioner. Okay, but side note, I'm going to stop here real quick because this was a long time ago and probably about 15 years ago. And this particular teacher was young, early in his teaching career. And I am just going to give him the benefit of the doubt and the grace that he's probably matured and grown up a little bit since then and is no longer doing things like this. We are going to talk all about this advanced yoga. What is it? What isn't it? And as teachers, how maybe using levels are a little more problematic than we might realize. So let's get into this. Here's another story that's going to illustrate some of what we're going to talk about in today's podcast. So years ago, I used to go to yoga workshops where we would spend hours focusing on different yoga poses, and we would be breaking down different poses. We would be working our way into advanced poses, for example. And invariably, at some point during the workshop, the teacher would get one of the more flexible people to demonstrate a pose like King Pigeon or Full Wheel. And the teacher would walk the person through the pose, sometimes doing a manual adjustment to get them deeper. And then finally, the person would be in the fullest expression of the pose, and we would all burst into enthusiastic applause. Ugh, that applause. It was well-meaning, but on a deeper level, what were we really clapping for? The concept of advanced poses, expressions like going deeper into the pose or the fullest expression of the pose, actually do more harm than good. Because what we're doing when we celebrate the most flexible person in the room, who actually is probably also hypermobile and needs the opposite type of movement, is that we're celebrating a genetic trait that has very little to do with the actual practice of yoga. Because what about those in the room with a different body, with different abilities, who, due to the length of their arms or the way they were born and the abilities that they have, when would they get their chance to be applauded? What about the person who managed to get out of bed that day and make it to a class despite their depression? What about the person who started yoga and could barely move their hips in a forward bend, was finally able to move a little bit further into that forward bend, but still looks like they barely got anywhere? What about that kind of progress? It's when we measure progress or advanced through physical means that that person's progress and anybody's progress becomes quite arbitrary, ableist, and unfair. Because what is progress anyways? Why do we celebrate the able-bodied folks who are born with flexibility? Why do we label advanced as something physical when advanced is so much more than what our body can or can't do? So guess what? There is no such thing as the fullest expression of a pose. There's no such thing as an advanced pose, which for me as a teacher is why I very intentionally don't label my classes using any sort of hierarchical levels like level 1, level 2, or 3, or words like intermediate or advanced. And let's be clear though, beginner makes sense. People who are new to yoga need spaces to help them feel comfortable learning new things. It's easier for you as a teacher. It's easier for them as learners. So don't throw the beginner baby out with the bathwater. Keep that one. That's always helpful if you've got beginner people in your classes. It's when we start labeling classes beyond beginners where things get a little bit tricky. And I can hear some of you saying, but Bree, it's super hard teaching an all levels class. Or the people who have been doing yoga for years love my advanced classes. Or maybe you teach at a studio that does levels and it seems to work really well. Okay, I hear you. Let's clarify things a little bit. When we create levels in our yoga classes and studios, it's generally around one's experience and levels of physical capability. And the assumption is if you have more experience practicing yoga, you probably have a decent flexibility and strength and can do many of the poses that require that strength and flexibility. Here's the thing though, if you've ever taught a class to a room full of people with years of yoga experience, you'll likely notice that there are still varying degrees of strength and flexibility in that very room because everyone is different. And everyone is different at different ages and stages in their life. For example, someone who's been practicing yoga for 30 years, that likely means while they have a depth of yoga experience, during those 30 years, their body has been changing and aging and probably currently can't do some of the advanced poses they could do when they were younger. So does that mean they can't go to an advanced class? Or on the flip side, what about somebody who just started yoga and they happen to be a dancer or a gymnast and happen to have the flexibility required to do those advanced poses? Would they do just fine in an advanced class, even though they're technically a beginner? Well, they would, but they're a beginner. So you can see how defining our classes based on physical capabilities is ableist and hierarchical and doesn't reflect the actual practice of yoga. Yoga is so much more than a physical practice. We know this. And while it may be true that the majority of classes out there are based in yoga asana, we can add the other layers of yoga into our teaching by reframing what advanced is, and then shifting the way that we teach yoga asana towards more accessible practices where everyone is welcome, no matter what their abilities are or aren't. Let's start with defining what advanced yoga is. So advanced yoga in our popular culture, here are some of the assumptions when it comes to advanced. So one of the things that is, as we've talked about already, somebody who's typically able to do poses that require a large range of motion. And I'd also add, sometimes the perception of advanced is somebody who can sit perfectly quietly in lotus or even cross-legged in meditation and possibly for hours. Another perception of advanced that many people have would be, well, they've got lots of yoga experience, or they are someone who never gets mad, swears, or reacts to things. And here's the rub. And generally speaking, if you teach yoga, it would be assumed that you'd fit into these norms of advanced, because don't you have to be advanced to teach? Ah, what if you teach and you can't do all the poses? What if you teach and you can't sit quietly or comfortably in meditation? What if you teach and you've been doing yoga for years and you still get mad? You still have perfectly normal reactions to things in your life? Are you a good enough teacher? Are you actually an advanced yogi? So by our cultural definition of what advanced is no, but unequivocally, yes. Because these rules, these assumptions of what advanced is, are harmful to you as a teacher, and they're also harmful to those in your classes. How we can make our teaching and practice more accessible and welcoming is to start moving away from this emphasis that progress in yoga needs to look a certain way, and instead honor the heart of the practice, the long-held tradition of yoga, by remembering that yoga is more than yoga asana, and yoga meets everyone where they are and as they are. Which means you can still teach the physical aspects of yoga with this in your mind and heart. For me, I view the physical practice as an opportunity to do these deeper practices, to learn more about myself, and often through the lens of movement. It's a way to focus my mind through paying attention to what my body is doing in a particular pose or movement. It's an opportunity to see my beliefs about myself, how I show up in how I view myself and my body, and how I view my teaching. For me, I want to do the physical practice with this mindful awareness so that I both not only feel better in my joints and muscles, but also that I have more capacity to be engaged in my life, to be able to do this inner work and growth. So I can practice yoga through the physical with this in mind, and hopefully we're able to teach this way as well. So another way that you can do that is make your classes accessible, by really focusing in this way, because I'm sure as you're listening to this, nodding your head, going, yes, this makes sense, That's great. But then I have a feeling the next time you go to plan your class, or the next time you're standing in the room looking around at all the different people and abilities, all of these grand ideas will fly out of the window and you won't know how to support a class where some people can barely touch the toes, and then you've got others who flop into each pose and everybody in between. That's hard. Teaching a mixed level, or shall we say a mixed ability class, is challenging when it comes to trying, which is why I think so many people put the levels in their classes, because it makes it easier for them as a teacher. But there are ways that you can teach a wide variety of people in the same class and have it actually be feel easy for you and easy and good and functional for the people in the classes. The first step, really simple, is to use inclusive language. So instead of saying things like, if you can't do this pose, or the advanced version of this pose, or the fullest expression of this pose, as a very common example, you make it more invitational. You make it more normalized and less hierarchical, which is, hey, here are some different options. Try them out. See which one feels best in your body. And another big one is shifting the way that you teach yoga asana from pose-based classes where you're trying to fit people into the poses, and instead shift it so that the poses are adapted for the people. And so how do you do that? Because I'm sure you've heard that before, but then when it comes to practice, it's like, well, what does that actually look like? Where do I get there? So what I love doing is, and especially in our Heart and Bones Yoga Teacher Training, we start by teaching what I call the movement ABCs. When you understand the foundation of healthy movement, it informs your teaching and informs your sequences and informs your decisions and the variations you offer everybody. Because when you understand how your joints and muscles want to move and should move and need to move for long-term health and sustainability, when you do really important things like change the emphasis from flexibility to mobility, when you really let go of trying to achieve these deep ranges of motions, well, that informs and transforms your teaching. Because then all of a sudden you start to look around at a room full of people with different experience levels and abilities, and then you can just feel more relaxed in your teaching because you have this bigger, helpful, more helpful toolbox in order that to teach a class that everybody will benefit from. So I call that the great equalizer. So when you come from a mobility-based approach, that means the most hypermobile person and the least flexible people in the class will be getting the benefits for the movement. And they get the same benefits, and they actually look more similar as opposed to the more flexibility-based classes where the super flexible person looks like they're going deep into that pose compared to the person with not as much flexibility, and they look way, just very different bodies. But mobility approach equals, oh, flexible person, non-flexible person, and they're doing the same movement and they don't look that different. It's kind of amazing. I personally love throwing out the concepts of levels or advanced classes and instead bringing in this mobility approach to yoga asana. And in my experience, so do the people who have taken my classes and workshops and trainings. Because honestly, I don't think I've ever had more light bulb moments or positive feedback from when I started to teach this way. It's huge. It's powerful. Now, I can also hear some of you saying, yeah, I get it, no more levels, but if I'm not doing levels, then what are we calling our classes? I got you. Here's some examples. If you're teaching a mobility-focused approach, you can generally get away without using any sort of levels because it works for everyone. As I already explained, when you come from this functional movement and focusing on mobility over flexibility, then truly, it's amazing to see how it really equalizes everybody. But that being said, there's different ways and styles and approaches to teach a mobility-focused practice. So for example, if you still love flow classes, and most of your classes tend to have that flowing experience in it, but you want to bring in this mobility approach, you could call your classes, and it's really ridiculously simple, you could call your classes something like mobility flow. Because you're probably, if you're moving to a more mobility focused flow class, you're probably not doing a vinyasa flow class, which is 500 chaturangas. People, you know, the pace is so fast that beginners or people with less mobility have a hard time keeping up. A mobility focused flow class acknowledges and shows people, hey, you're going to do a flow class. It's going to be a little more energizing. We're going to move a little faster, but we're also going to bring attention to healthy movement, smart cues, etc. Right? So mobility flow or functional flow, something like that. And then another way to label your classes is by energy levels. So for example, in our Heart and Bones online yoga studio, we do not do levels for our classes. And instead, what we do is categorize them into three different ways. We label them relaxing, easygoing, and energizing. We also, on a side note, label them. You can pick what body part you want to do, like hips and shoulders. You can click on the length of the class that you want to do. So there are other ways to filter. But instead, by picking, well, what mood am I in? Am I in a mood for a more relaxing class? Am I in a mood for something a little more easygoing? Or do I want something energizing? It's no longer about what I can or can't do with my body. It's more, well, ooh, yay, I get to listen to what I need and choose that. So much more simple, because then we don't make assumptions that just because somebody can't get down on the floor, for example, or have knees that aren't happy in lunges, that they wouldn't want to do an energizing class. There's absolutely ways to do energizing, flowy classes for all abilities. You can do that in a chair class. You can do that with props, without props, right? So it's more about how taking that next step as a teacher and going, well, how do I really make this work for people? How do people also have autonomy to choose what's right for them? When we can invite people of all experiences and abilities to pick and choose what's right for them, not from a place of hierarchy of physical abilities like levels typically are, it's a powerful reframe and experience. So as a teacher, I really hope this inspires you to start to, at the very least, reframe the words we use in our classes, how we describe the classes even, again, and how we label them. And if you're looking for more resources, so now if you're curious, going, well, what the heck does a mobility yoga focused class look like? What do these different levels, like easygoing, energizing, for example, look like? Well, check out the Heart and Bones online studio. So you can see that, do a free trial, just do it for the 7 days, whatever works for you, but see what it looks like in real life. And I have a feeling you're going to go, oh, yes. Or if you're a teacher already familiar with this, or you're curious with this approach and maybe want to start teaching in this way and want more guidance, well, of course, there's always our Heart and Bones online yoga teacher training, where we've been doing that for 5 years. Go check that out. Both of these things at the studio and the teacher training are in the show notes. But no matter what, I hope this has gotten you to think a little bit differently. Open your mind, expand the breadth of what advanced actually means. Because guess what? When you start going this way, I have a feeling you're a little more advanced then. Thanks for being here.